I surrender. The topic today is a little counterintuitive. In surrender lies victory, until you approach it from a superconscious beginning. And as I thought about it, I was on a field trip with 18 middle schoolers. And I realized that at the heart of our topic today is the will. And so I saw it play out in front of me for a solid week with all these delightful children, almost adults, but not quite, exerting their will most of the time in the very positive direction. And I thought, how do I extrapolate from this reading? And it came to me that this summer's pilgrimage to Italy was a source of tremendous inspiration and enlightenment for me personally. And I'm going to share just a few things that I experienced on it. And I see some of my fellow pilgrims out there. And hopefully it will resonate with everybody. But we went to Italy. And we landed in Rome, and we went to Assisi, and we went to Siena. And as a child, of course, I was totally entranced by the saints, and this was living out my desire to be where they were, to have a greater understanding, and to be in their vibration. And it was wonderful. I was with a group of people who were serious meditators, and shopping was way down on the list. Until the day came when we went to Cortona. Now, I'd lived in Italy for about a year, many years ago, and I had never been to Cortona. I lived in Florence, I'd been to Assisi, I'd been to Siena, I'd been to all those places, Rome. But I'd never been to Cortona. I didn't know really why we were going to Cortona. And somebody said, oh, we're going to shop, because in Cortona you can get really good bargains. They have all the same things that you can buy in all the other great tourist traps, but they're cheaper. And after all, when you're traveling, you have to bring things back for those who await you, don't you? So I got into the spirit of the thing, and I was ready to shop. But first, we went to the hilltop on which was the Basilica in honor of Saint Marguerite. And in all my readings of saints, I had never read the story of Saint Marguerite. I'd known Marguerites. So I knew there must be a saint somewhere in the background. But this Saint Marguerite, nothing. And as I read about her, I found it thrilling. Because let me tell you her story. I'm sure most of you don't know very much about her. She's not a Saint Dominic. She's not a Saint Francis. You know, all those major, Thomas Aquinas, major saints within the Christian tradition. But she was a great saint. She was born in Perugia. It was somewhere around the 13th century. And her mother died when she was 7. And this was a huge test. A huge calamity for her. And I imagine to myself, what would it have been like had my mother died when I was 7? How would I have responded? Well, she didn't respond very well. Her father remarried, and the stepmother came into the picture, and Cinderella played out all over again. And instead of being submissive, she was willful. And her will acted out, and she made life miserable for everybody. Until she grew up old enough in her teens to make an alliance with a young man in the village, and they fell in love, and they ran off and they got married, because nobody would affirm their relationship. So they just did it. Actually, they didn't get married. They ran off and lived together. And that was, in those days, outrageous. And they had a child, even more outrageous. And for 10 years, they lived together. His family, no. Her family, no. And then one day, he went off, and she waited for him to come home. He didn't come home, and the dog came home. And then she worried, and she followed the dog, and there he was, lying on the road, murdered. And that was the end of the willful years in the ego for her. Because at that point, everybody on the earthly plane turned away from her. His family wouldn't take her in. She had a child. Her family wouldn't take her in. And so she turned and ended to the monks, interestingly enough, in Cortona. There was a Franciscan monastery there. And they took her in. Her son, they educated, and she herself became what's called a lay member. In other words, she didn't take the vows themselves, she didn't wear the habit, but she lived the life. And the life was a life in God. She simply turned her will to God in everything, in every permutation. And she went out and begged for food. She lived the life of St. Francis. So there is St. Marguerite in Cortona. And I'm thinking, well, this is a great story. And she's there, incorruptible, in her body, right on the main altar. As was our habit, we would gather together in those places that allowed it, and we would sing Swami's songs. And in this particular instance, we sang, "Thy light within us shining." Now, sometimes, when you're in the vibration of a saint, things happen. And this was such a time. Because we were not the choir. Some of us were in the choir, but certainly not all of us. And yet, those voices, our voices, soared inside the vault of that cathedral, up to the very top of the cathedral, resounding with this vibration of holiness and sanctity and God aliveness. It was an incredible moment. And it wasn't the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It was just us and Saint Marguerite. The little nun who was tending the main altar came up to us later and said to us, "Maybe you should sing some more." So that was Cortona, and then afterwards we went out and chopped. But there was another surprise in Cortona, because somebody said, "Oh, there's a museum somewhere, and it's supposed to be pretty good. We should go check it out." I mean, this was not a major tourist trap city. So in the spirit of, yes, let's do it, we did it. We could hardly find it. We had a few missteps along the way. And when we came, it was not an imposing building. Most museums are. It was kind of a small building at the end of a road. And we weren't even sure it was open. And we exchanged money for tickets. And I looked at the ticket, but I didn't really look at the ticket well. That came later. And we walked in. So there were antiquities there. There were frescoes. I can't even tell you all the names of the artists, but you would recognize most of them. When I walked into the main room, I saw on the opposing wall this picture, this painting. And I was drawn to it like a magnet. It shone. There was vibration coming off that canvas. I had no idea that Fra Angelico had spent years in Cortona. And you go back to Fra Angelico. Now, this is a little history, because you have to understand what I'm going to say. You have to understand the history. Fra Angelico was born outside of Florence in a little town up in the area up near Fiesole on a hill overlooking the Arno. It was an area that drew great artists because the light was so clear. And he was just a country boy. He grew up in the nature. He was kind of outside of the energy of Florence, which was the hustle and the bustle of the New Age and the Renaissance, right? Artists beginning to gather and produce these world-famous paintings. No, he was up on the hill. And when he was 18, he decided that he was going to join the Dominican friars who had a convent there, San Domenico. And so he did. But the first year when you join an order, you go into a training. It's like the sadhakas, right? And they didn't do that at Fiesole. No, they exported all their potential monks over to Cortona. So Fra Angelico ends up in Cortona. Now, before then, he had been a painter. He had painted miniatures, and that was his specialty. And little by little, he grew into these large paintings. I think you must all know about Fra Angelico paintings. So he spent a year in Cortona, and what did he do besides pray and meditate? He painted. And he left on the wall of the museum there, probably had been in a chapel earlier, or maybe in the cathedral, this painting of the Annunciation of Our Lady. Now, there's a very famous painting of Fra Angelico Annunciation. It's actually in the bathroom in the center, in our center. But that's not the one I'm talking about. He did many paintings. That one was muted colors. It was serene. It's beautiful. It's probably the most famous of his Annunciation paintings. This painting I had also seen, but I'd never been drawn to it like this. It was filled with gold. Our Lady is sitting on a gold chair that's textured in gold. She's leaning forward, her arms crossed like this, in an attitude of reverence, and she's listening. And you can tell that in her posture, there's this receptivity and also wonderment as to what is going on. And opposing her is the angel with these huge golden wings, also textured, and a dress that mirrors Our Lady's, red, gold, except Our Lady had the cloak of deep blue. And the floor is gold, and the porticles are shining, illuminated with light. The light suffuses this entire painting. Now, the angel is leaning towards Our Lady, and his hand is outstretched. He's explaining something. And out of his mouth, you see the words come. They're actually words in this painting. And I looked very closely. I put my camera up to take a close-up because I couldn't really see the words. I thought, well, maybe it's Latin. I could probably read the Latin. No. I thought, maybe it's Italian. I could read the Italian. No. I don't know what it was. Maybe somebody can find out for me. But he had this message, and she was listening intently. Now, we all know what the message was. In the Bible account of the Annunciation, the angel is telling Mary that she is soon to become the mother of God, that she's going to have a baby, and that his name is going to be Jesus. And she says, how is that possible? I am a maid. And the angel says, with God, all things are possible. And Mary says, be it done according to thy will. Now, in that exchange is everything that is in our reading. Because Mary didn't come to that moment unprepared. In the tradition, she, at 2 years of age, was presented to the temple for purification. And she stayed in the temple until she reached her majority, probably around 12 or 13 or 14. She was a member of the Essenes. They were the most mystical branch of Judaism. And in that time, there was the sense that the Messiah was coming, and that there would be a woman who would give birth to the Messiah. And she must be the purest of the pure instruments of the Lord in order to assume that role. And many of the young women were prepared with the thought that, well, maybe, you never know. But not only in that lifetime, but in many, many previous lifetimes had been the running up to this one specific moment. Now, the import of what the angel said to her went far beyond, oh, the prophecy is about to be fulfilled and you are going to be God's instrument. It had a very practical side to it, the test that she faced in that moment. Because she had been betrothed to Joseph, the carpenter in Nazareth. In those days, a betrothal was as binding as a marriage. It was legal. It was documents. It was legal scholars supervising. And to break a betrothal would have had serious, serious consequences. And yet, she says, "Thy will be done. I am the handmaiden of the Lord." And she, in that moment, was so attuned, so aware of what was happening, of who the angel was representing, of the reality behind the moment, that she was able to rise up and respond with all of her being. And that's what Fra Angelico captured in that painting. And you have to ask yourself, how? How did he do it? Well, he was not just an artist. He was a mystic. Fra Angelico said, he went later on and he went down to Florence when the word got out, there is an exquisite painter hidden up in Fiesole. Come on, bring him down to Florence where the Renaissance is happening. And he did, under orders from his superior, he went to San Marco in Florence. He painted these fabulous frescoes in every monk's cell. And they were subjects were hand-picked. When the Pope came to visit, he was given his cell. Fra Angelico painted the coming of the Magi to worship Jesus. And I thought, wow. He said, never did he correct a stroke on his paintings because they were simply channeled from God. He never painted anything unless it came from God. Now, in those days, in the art world, things were happening. We were coming away in our understanding of how to replicate our visions artistically from that which was a little more artificial to that which was more realistic. And the realists criticized Fra Angelico. They said, what's he thinking? The sources of light don't match up with reality because all of his paintings were suffused with this tremendous light. There were halos all over the place. There were saints, there were angels, there was Jesus. And I think to myself as I appreciate their point of view, they just don't understand that what was happening was he was painting from the inside out. And they're painting from the outside in. And from the inside out, of course, the source of light might not match up with the sun or the moon or whatever happened to be out there. But rather, it matched up with the interior reality of the soul being painted. And so we had this beautiful picture that captures in the moment the awareness, the humility, and the willpower that goes in to surrendering our wills to God. It's not a simple thing. Mary was not an ordinary woman. Fra Angelico was not an ordinary painter. He actually came in at a time after Francis had come to rebuild the church according to the direction of Jesus. The church had been coming through away from a period of great corruption and impurity. One could never be certain that monks would observe their vows. One could never be certain that there would be honesty in the dealings. It was a really dark time. And Fra Angelico came in at a time where the course correction was happening and the convent that he was part of, was part of the resolution of all of that dark energy into light energy. Strict observance. The monks were known for being very, very worthy, and he was known for being very, very holy. It's incredible when you think of the power that he captured in that painting to change a life just looking at it. Because when I looked at it, I thought to myself, I'm never going to be the same. The communication was pure. The communication was serious. The communication was real in the sense that isn't that what faces every single one of us as we move through life? That we come up against these moments when we are put to the test. When God asks something of us, a response, in the highest possible way. And so often, I don't know about you, but certainly about me, I say, why me, God? No, not this. I didn't ask for that. Really? You can't be serious. You know, I'm constantly looking at these things, and then I have to catch myself. And then I have to say, well, here it is, right in front of me. And not only that, if I really were honest with myself, I might see a theme through my life. Oh yeah, I remember. It happened here, it happened there, it happened here. It's mine. It's mine to deal with. It's mine to overcome. It's mine to own. Even though I don't understand it. Sometimes I think, which incarnation did that happen in that caused this to come my way? We don't. And so, what is left for us to do but to do what Mary did? Develop the highest level of awareness that we can that brings us to an attunement with the divine so that our trajectory on this journey in life to dissolve back into the design stays as straight as possible. And that requires a lot of willpower. A lot of willpower. Because it's really easy to fall back into dejectedness, into despair, into disappointment, into mourning, into grief, into you name it. All those negativities that are out there nibbling away at our consciousness, saying, what about me? What about me? And instead, we have the opportunity to hone in like a laser on the light that is in our lives. And we have so much light in our lives. I think of being together here with you today. Souls coming together to pray, to meditate, to talk, to laugh, to share. And I think that's the beam of light that's going to beam me up. Because to do it alone is really, really hard. To get to that point where Mary was, where after incarnations of preparation, in the moment she knew, she acted, and she transcended. To get to that moment requires help. Now, the one thing that the angel said that has brought me consolation over and over again in my life is, with God, everything is possible. All things are possible with God. Without God, nothing is possible. And on that note,